his right foot, and having unhooked a purple elastic sock suspender, took off his right sock, placed his unclothed right foot on the margin of the seat of his chair, picked at and gently lacerated the protruding part of the great toenail, raised the part lacerated to his nostrils, and inhaled the odour of the quick, then with satisfaction threw away the lacerated unguical fragment. Why with satisfaction? Because the odour inhaled corresponded to other odours inhaled of other unguical fragments, picked and lacerated by Master Bloom, pupil of Mrs. Ellis Juvenile School, patiently each night in the act of brief genuflection and nocturnal prayer and ambitious meditation. In what ultimate ambition had all concurrent and consecutive ambitions now coalesced? Not to inherit by right of primogeniture, Gavelkind or Borough English, or possess in perpetuity an extensive domain of sufficient number of acres, roods and perches, statute land measure, valuation £42, of grazing turbary, surrounding a baronial hall with gate lodge and carriage drive, nor, on the other hand, a terrace house or semi-detached villa, described as Russin Orbe or Quisi Sana, but to purchase by private treaty in fee simple a thatched, bungalow-shaped, two-story dwelling house of southerly aspect, surmounted by vane and lightning conductor, connected with the earth, with porch covered by parasitic plant, ivy or Virginia creeper, hall door, olive green with smart carriage finish, and neat door brasses, stucco front with gilt tracery at eaves and gable rising, if possible, upon a gentle eminence with agreeable prospect from balcony, with stone pillar parapet over unoccupied and unoccupiable interjacent pastures, and standing in 5 or 6 acres of its own ground, at such a distance from the nearest public thoroughfare as to render its house lights visible at night above and through a quick-set hornbeam hedge of topiary cutting, situate at a given point not less than 1 statute mile from the periphery of the metropolis, within a time limit of not more than 5 minutes from tram or train line, e.g. Dumdum South or Sutton North, both localities equally reported by trial to resemble the terrestrial poles in being favourable climates for physical subjects. The premises to be held under fee farm grant, lease 999 years, the message to consist of 1 drawing room with bay window, 2 lancets, thermometer affixed, 1 sitting room, 4 bedrooms, 2 servants' rooms, tiled kitchen with close range and scullery, lounge hall fitted with linen, wall presses, fumed oak sectional bookcase containing the Encyclopaedia Britannica and New Century Dictionary, transverse obsolete medieval and oriental weapons, dinner gong, alabaster lamp, bowl pendant, vulcanite automatic telephone receiver with adjacent directory, hand-tufted Axminster carpet with cream ground and trellis border, loo table with pillar and floor legs, hearth with massive fire brasses and ormolu mantel chronometer clock, guaranteed timekeeper with cathedral chime, barometer with hygrographic chart, comfortable lounge settees and corner fitments, upholstered in ruby plush with good springing and sunk centre, 3-banner Japanese screen and cuspidors, club-style, rich wine-coloured leather, gloss renewable with a minimum of labour by use of linseed oil and vinegar, and pyramidically prismatic central chandelier lustre, bentwood perch with a finger-tamed parrot, expurgated language, embossed mural paper at 10 shillings per dozen with transverse swags of carmine floral design and top-crown frieze, staircase, 3 continuous flights at successive right angles of varnished clear-grained oak, treads and risers, newel, balusters and handrail, with stepped-up panelled dado, dressed with camphorated wax, bathroom, hot and cold supply, reclining and shower, water closet on mezzanine provided with opaque single-pane oblong window, tip-up seat, bracket lamp, a brass-tiered brace, armrests, footstool and artistic oleograph on inner face of door, ditto plane, servants' apartments with separate sanitary and hygienic necessaries for cook, general, and between-maid, salary rising by biennial unearned increments of £2, with comprehensive fidelity insurance, annual bonus £1, and retiring allowance based on the 65 system after 30 years' service. Pantry, buttery, larder, refrigerator, out-offices, coal and wood cellarage with wine bin, still and sparkling vintages for distinguished guests if entertained to dinner, evening dress. Carbon monoxide gas supply throughout. What additional attractions might the grounds contain? As addenda, a tennis and fives court, a shrubbery, at last summer house with tropical palms, equipped in the best botanical manner, a rockery with water spray, a beehive arranged on humane principles, oval flower beds in rectangular grass plots, set with eccentric ellipses of scarlet and chrome tulips, blue scillas, crocuses, polyanthus, sweet william, sweet pea, lily of the valley, bulbs obtainable from Sir James W. Mackey Limited, wholesale and retail, seed and bulb merchant and nurseryman, agent for chemical manures, 23 Sackville Street Upper, an orchard, kitchen garden and vinery, protected against illegal trespassers by glass-topped mural enclosures, a lumber shed with padlock for various inventoried implements, as eel traps, lobster pots, fishing rods, hatchet, steelyard, grindstone, clod crusher, swathe turner, carriage sack, telescope ladder, ten-tooth rake, washing clogs, hay tedder, tumbling rake, billhook, paint pot, brush, hoe, and so on. What improvements might be subsequently introduced? A rabbitry and fowl run, a dovecote, a botanical conservatory, two hammocks, ladies and gentlemen, a sundial shaded and sheltered by laburnum or lilac trees, an exotically harmonically accorded Japanese tinkle gate bell affixed to left lateral gatepost, a capacious water butt, a lawnmower with side delivery and grass box, a lawn sprinkler with hydraulic hose. What facilities of transit were desirable? When city-bound, frequent connection by train or tram from the respective intermediate station or terminal. When country-bound, velocipedes, a chainless free-wheel roadster cycle with side basket car attached, or draft conveyance, a donkey with wicker trap, or smart phaeton with good working solidangular cob, roan gelding 14 hands. What might be the name of this erigible or erected residence? Bloom Cottage, St. Leopold's, Flowerville. Could Bloom of 7 Eckler Street foresee Bloom of Flowerville? In loose all-wool garments with Harris tweed cap, price 8 and 6 pence, and useful garden boots with elastic gussets, and watering can, planting aligned young fir trees. Syringing, pruning, staking, sowing hayseed, trundling a weed-laden wheelbarrow without excessive fatigue at sunset amid the scent of new-mown hay, ameliorating the soil, multiplying wisdom, achieving longevity. What syllabus of intellectual pursuits was simultaneously possible? Snapshot photography, comparative study of religions, folklore relative to various amatory and superstitious practices, contemplation of the celestial constellations. What lighter recreations? Outdoor, garden and fieldwork, cycling on level macadamized causeways, ascents of moderately high hills, natation in secluded fresh water and unmolested river boating in secure wherry or light curricle with kedge anchor on reaches free from weirs and rapids, period of estivation, vespertinal perambulation or equestrian circumprocession with inspection of sterile landscape and contrasting agreeable cottages fires of smoking peat turves, period of hibernation. Indoor discussion in tepid security of unsolved historical and criminal problems. Lecture of unexpurgated exotic erotic masterpieces. House carpentry with toolbox containing hammer, awl, nails, screws, tin tacks, gimlet, tweezers, bullnose plane and turnscrew. Might he become a gentleman farmer of field produce and livestock? Not impossibly, with one or two stripper cows, one pike of upland hay, and requisite farming implements, e.g. an end-to-end churn, a turnip pulper, etc. What would be his civic functions and social status among the country families and landed gentry? Arranged successfully in ascending powers of hierarchical order, that of gardener, groundsman, cultivator, breeder, and at the zenith of his career, resident magistrate or justice of the peace, with a family crest and coat of arms and appropriate classical motto, Semper Paratus, duly recorded in the court directory, Bloom, Leopold P., M.P., P.C., K.P., LLD Honoris Causa, Bloomville Dundrum, and mentioned in court and fashionable intelligence, Mr. and Mrs. Leopold Bloom have left Kingstown for England. What course of action did he outline for himself in such capacity? A course that lay between undue clemency and excessive rigour. The dispensation in a heterogeneous society of arbitrary classes, incessantly rearranged in terms of greater and lesser social inequality, of unbiased, homogeneous, indisputable justice, tempered with mitigants of the widest possible latitude, but exactable to the uttermost farthing, with confiscation of estate, real and personal, to the Crown. loyal to the highest constituted power in the land, actuated by an innate love of rectitude, his aims would be the strict maintenance of public order, the repression of many abuses, though not of all simultaneously, every measure of reform or retrenchment being a preliminary solution to be contained by fluxion in the final solution, the upholding of the letter of the law, common, statute and law merchant, against all traversers in coven and trespassers acting in contravention of bylaws and regulations, all resuscitators by trespass and petty larceny of kindlings, of venville rights obsolete by desuetude, all orator and instigators of international persecution, all perpetuators of international animosities, all menial molesters of domestic conviviality, all recalcitrant violators of domestic connubiality. Prove that he had loved rectitude from his earliest youth. To Master Percy Apjohn at high school in 1880, he had divulged his disbelief in the tenets of the Irish Protestant Church, to which his father, Rudolf Virag, later Rudolf Bloom, had been converted from the Israelitic faith and communion in 1865 by the Society for Promoting Christianity Among the Jews, subsequently abjured by him in favour of Roman Catholicism at the epoch of, and with a view to, his matrimony in 1888. To Daniel McGrane and Francis Wade in 1882, during a juvenile friendship, terminated by the premature emigration of the former. He had advocated during nocturnal perambulations the political theory of colonial, e.g. Canadian, expansion, and the evolutionary theories of Charles Darwin, expounded in The Descent of Man and The Origin of Species. In 1885, he had publicly expressed his adherence to the collective and national economic program advocated by James Fenton Lawler, John Fisher Murray, John Mitchell, J.F.X. O'Brien, and others, the agrarian policy of Michael Davitt, the constitutional agitation of Charles Stewart Parnell, MP for Cork City, the program of peace, retrenchment, and reform of William Ewart Gladstone, MP for Midlothian, NB, and in support of his political convictions, had climbed up into a secure position amid the ramifications of a tree on Northumberland Road to see the entrance, 2nd of February 1888, into the capital of a demonstrative torchlight procession of 20,000, divided into 120 trade corporations, bearing 2,000 torches in escort of the Marquis of Ripon and John Morley. How much and how did he propose to pay for this country residence? As per prospectus of the Industrious Foreign Acclimatized Nationalized Friendly State-Aided Building Society, incorporated 1874, a maximum of £60 per annum, being one-sixth of the assured income derived from gilt-edged securities, representing at 5% simple interest on capital of 1,200, estimate of price at 20 years' purchase, of which a third to be paid on acquisition, and the balance in the form of annual rent, viz. £800, plus 2.5% interest on the same, repayable quarterly in equal annual instalments until extinction by amortization of loan advanced for purchase within a period of 20 years, amounting to an annual rental of £64, head rent included, the title deeds to remain in possession of the lender or lenders, with a saving clause in visiting for sale, foreclosure and mutual compensation in the event of protracted failure to pay the terms assigned. Otherwise, the messuage to become the absolute property of the tenant-occupier upon expiry of the period of years stipulated. What rapid but insecure means to opulence might facilitate immediate purchase? A private wireless telegraph, which would transmit by dot-and-dash system the result of a national equine handicap, flat or steeplechase, of one or more miles and furlongs, won by an outsider at odds of 50-1, at 3 hours, 8 minutes p.m. at Ascot, Greenwich time, the message being received and available for betting purposes in Dublin at 2:59 p.m., Dunsink time. The unexpected discovery of an object of great monetary value, precious stone, valuable adhesive, or impressed postage stamps, 7 shilling mauve, imperforate, Hamburg, 1866, 4 pence rose blue paper perforate, Great Britain, 1855, 1 franc stone official, rouletted diagonal surcharge, Luxembourg, 1878, antique dynastical ring, unique relic in unusual repositories or by unusual means, from the air dropped by an eagle in flight, by fire amid the carbonized remains of an incendiated edifice, in the sea amid flotsam, jetsam, lagan, and derelict, on earth in the gizzard of a comestible fowl. A Spanish prisoner's donation of a distant treasure of valuables or specie or bullion, lodged with a solvent banking corporation 100 years previously at 5% compound interest of the collective worth of £5 million sterling. a contract with an inconsiderate contractee for the delivery of 32 consignments of some given commodity in consideration of cash payment on delivery at the initial rate of a farthing, to be increased constantly in the geometrical progression of 2, a farthing, a halfpenny, a penny, tuppence, fourpence, eightpence, 1 and 4pence, 2 and 8pence, to 32 terms. A prepared scheme based on a study of the laws of probability to break the Bank of Monte Carlo. A solution of the secular problem of the quadrature of the circle, government premium, £1 million sterling. Was vast wealth acquirable through industrial channels? The reclamation of dunams of waste arenary soil, proposed in the prospectus of Agendaffner Thym, Bleibtreustrasse, Berlin W15, by the cultivation of orange plantations and melon fields and reafforestation. The utilization of waste paper, fells of sewer rodents, human excrement, possessing chemical properties in view of the vast production of the first, vast numbers of the second, and immense quantity of the third, every normal human being of average vitality and appetite, producing annually cancelling byproducts of water, a sum total of £80, mixed animal and vegetable diet, to be multiplied by 4,386,035, the total population of Ireland, according to the census returns of 1901. Were there schemes of wider scope? A scheme to be formulated and submitted for approval to the harbour commissioners for the exploitation of white coal, hydraulic power, obtained by hydroelectric plant at peak of tide at Dublin Bar, or at head of water at Pool of Fuca, or Powerscourt, or catchment basins of main streams for the economic production of 500,000 WHP of electricity. A scheme to enclose the peninsular delta of the North Bull at Dollymount and erect on the space of the foreland, used for golf links and rifle ranges, an asphalted esplanade with casinos, booths, shooting galleries, hotels, boarding houses, reading rooms, establishments for mixed bathing. A scheme for the use of dog vans and goat vans for the delivery of early morning milk. A scheme for the development of Irish tourist traffic in and around Dublin by means of petrol-propelled riverboats plying in the fluvial fairway between Island Bridge and Ringsend. Charabancs, narrow-gauge local railways and pleasure steamers for coastwise navigation. 10 shillings per person per day. Guide, trilingual included. A scheme for the repristination of passenger and goods traffics over Irish waterways when freed from weed beds. A scheme to connect by tramline the cattle market, North Circular Road and Prussia Street, with the Quays, Sherer Street Lower and East Wall, parallel with the Link Line Railway, laid in conjunction with the Great Southern and Western Railway Line, between the Cattle Park, Liffey Junction, and terminus of Midland Great Western Railway, 43 to 45 North Wall, in proximity to the terminal stations or Dublin branches of Great Central Railway, Midland Railway of England, City of Dublin Steam Packet Company, Lancashire-Yorkshire Railway Company, Dublin and Glasgow Steam Packet Company, Glasgow-Dublin and Londonderry Steam Packet Company, Laird Line, British and Irish Steam Packet Company, Dublin and Morecambe Steamers, London and North Western Railway Company, Dublin Port and Docks Board Landing Sheds and Transit Sheds of Palgrave Murphy and Company, steamship owners, agents for steamers from Mediterranean, Spain, Portugal, France, Belgium and Holland, and for animal transports and of additional mileage operated by the Dublin United Tramways Company Limited, to be covered by graziers' fees. Positing what protases would the contraction for such several schemes become a natural and necessary apodosis? Given a guarantee equal to the sum sought, the support by deed of gift and transfer vouchers during donor's lifetime, or by bequest after donor's painless extinction of eminent financiers, Blum Pasha, Rothschild, Guggenheim, Hirsch, Montefiore, Morgan, Rockefeller, possessing fortunes in six figures amassed during a successful life and joining capital with opportunity, the thing required was done. What eventually would render him independent of such wealth? The independent discovery of a gold seam of inexhaustible ore. For what reason did he meditate on schemes so difficult of realization? It was one of his axioms that similar meditations, or the automatic relation to himself of a narrative concerning himself, or tranquil recollection of the past, when practiced habitually before retiring for the night, alleviated fatigue and produced as a result sound repose and renovated vitality. His justifications? As a physicist, he had learned that of the 70 years of complete human life, at least 2/7, viz. 20 years, passed in sleep. As a philosopher, he knew that at the termination of any allotted life, only an infinitesimal part of any person's desires has been realized. As a physiologist, he believed in the artificial application of malignant agencies chiefly operative during somnolence. What did he fear? The committal of homicide or suicide during sleep by an aberration of the light of reason. The incommensurable categorical intelligence situated in the cerebral convolutions. What were habitually his final meditations? Of some one sole unique advertisement to cause passers to stop and wonder. A poster novelty, with all extraneous accretions excluded, reduced to its simplest and most efficient terms, not exceeding the span of casual vision, and congruous with the velocity of modern life. What did the first drawer, unlocked, contain? Avere Foster's handwriting copybook, property of Millie Millicent Bloom, certain pages of which bore diagram drawings marked Papley, which showed a large globular head with five hairs erect, two eyes in profile, the trunk full front with three large buttons, one triangular foot. Two fading photographs of Queen Alexandra of England and of Maud Branscombe, actress and professional beauty. A Yuletide card, bearing on it a pictorial representation of a parasitic plant, the legend Mizpah. The date, Xmas 1892, the name of the senders, from Mr. and Mrs. M. Comerford, the versicle, "May this Yuletide bring to thee joy and peace and welcome glee." A butt of red, partly liquefied sealing wax, obtained from the stores department of Messrs. Healy's Limited, 89, 90 and 91 Dame Street. A box containing the remainder of a gross of gilt J. pen nibs, obtained from same department of same firm. An old sandglass which rolled, containing sand which rolled. A sealed prophecy, never unsealed, written by Leopold Bloom in 1886, concerning the consequences of the passing into law of William Ewart Gladstone's Home Rule Bill of 1886, never passed into law. A bazaar ticket, number 2004, of St. Kevin's Charity Fair, price sixpence, 100 prizes. An infantile epistle, dated small m, Monday, reading capital P, Papley, comma, capital H, how are you? Note of interrogation, capital I. I am very well, full stop. New paragraph. Signature with flourishes, capital M, Millie, no stop. A cameo brooch, property of Ellen Bloom, born Higgins, deceased. Three typewritten letters, addressee Henry Flower, care of P.O. Westland Row, addresser Martha Clifford, care of P.O. Dolphin's Barn. The transliterated name and address of the addresser of the three letters in reserved alphabetic boustropodontic punctuated quadrilinear cryptogram, vowel suppressed, N, IGS, stroke W1, UU, OX, stroke W, OKS, MH, stroke Y, IM. A press cutting from an English weekly periodical, Modern Society, subject corporal chastisement in girls' schools. A pink ribbon, which had festooned an Easter egg in the year 1899. Two partly uncoiled rubber preservatives with reserve pockets, purchased by post from Box 32, P.O. Charing Cross, London, W.C. One pack of one dozen cream-laid envelopes and faint-ruled notepaper, watermarked, now reduced by three. Some assorted Austrian-Hungarian coins. Two coupons of the Royal and Privileged Hungarian Lottery. A low-power magnifying glass. Two erotic photo cards showing A, a buccal coition between nude senorita, rear presentation, superior position, and nude torero, fore presentation, inferior position. B, anal violation by male religious, fully clothed, eyes abject, or female religious, partly clothed, eyes direct. Purchased by post from Box 32, P.O., Charing Cross, London, W.C. A press cutting of recipe for renovation of old tan boots. A one-penny adhesive stamp, lavender, of the reign of Queen Victoria. A chart of measurements of Leopold Bloom, compiled before, during and after 2 months of consecutive use of Sandow Whiteley's pulley exerciser. Men's 15 shillings, athletes 20 shillings, viz. Chest 28 inches and 29 and a half inches, biceps 9 inches and 10 inches, forearm 8 and a half inches and 9 inches, thigh 10 inches and 12 inches, calf 11 inches and 12 inches. One prospectus of the Wonder Worker, the world's greatest remedy for rectal complaints, direct from Wonder Worker, Coventry House, South Place, London, EC, addressed to Mrs. L. Bloom, with brief accompanying note commencing, Dear Madam. Quote the textual terms in which the prospectus claimed advantages for this thaumaturgic remedy. It heals and soothes while you sleep. In case of trouble and breaking wind, assists nature in the most formidable way, ensuring instant relief in discharge of gases. Keeping parts clean and free, natural action. An initial outlay of 7 and 6 pence, making a new man of you and life worth living. Ladies find Wonder Worker especially useful, a pleasant surprise when they note delightful result like a cool drink of fresh spring water on a sultry summer's day. Recommended to your lady and gentleman friends, lasts a lifetime. Insert long round end. Wonder Worker. Weather testimonials. Numerous, from clergyman, British naval officer, well-known author, city man, hospital nurse, lady, mother of five, absent-minded beggar. How did absent-minded beggar's concluding testimonial conclude? What a pity the government did not supply our men with wonder workers during the South African campaign. What a relief it would have been. What object did Bloom add to this collection of objects? A fourth typewritten letter received by Henry Flower, lit HFBLB, from Master Clifford, find MC. What pleasant reflection accompanied this action? The reflection that, apart from the letter in question, his magnetic face, form and address had been favourably received during the course of the preceding day by a wife, Mrs. Josephine Breen, born Josie Powell, a nurse, Miss Callan, Christian name unknown, a maid, Gertrude, Gertie, family name unknown. What possibility suggested itself? The possibility of exercising virile power of fascination in the most immediate future after an expensive repast in a private apartment in the company of an elegant courtesan of corporal beauty, moderately mercenary, variously instructed, a lady by origin. What did the second drawer contain? Documents. The birth certificate of Leopold Paula Bloom. An endowment assurance policy of £500 in the Scottish Widows Assurance Society, interstated Millicent Millie Bloom, coming into force at 25 years, as with profit policy of £430, £462.10, and £500 at 60 years or death. 65 years or death and death respectively, or with profit policy paid up of £299.10, together with cash payment of £133.10 at option. A bank passbook, issued by the Ulster Bank College Green Branch, showing statement of account for half-year, ending the 31st of December 1903, balance in depositor's favour, £18.14.6 sterling, net personalty. Certificate of possession of £900, Canadian, 4% inscribed government stock, free of stamp duty. Dockets of the Catholic Cemetery's Glasnevin Committee, relative to a grave plot purchased. A local press cutting concerning change of name by Deed Pole. Quote the textual terms of this notice. I, Rudolf Virag, now resident at No. 52 Clanbrassil Street, Dublin, formerly of Jean Bathily in the Kingdom of Hungary, hereby give notice that I have assumed and intend henceforth upon all occasions and at all times to be known by the name of Rudolf Bloom. What other objects relative to Rudolf Bloom, born Virag, were in the second drawer? An indistinct daguerreotype of Rudolf Virag and his father Leopold Virag, executed in the year 1852, in the portrait atelier of their respectively first and second cousin, Stefan Virag of Szeszfővár, Hungary. An ancient Haggadah book, in which a pair of horn-rimmed convex spectacles, inserted, marked the passage of thanksgiving in the ritual prayers for Pesach, Passover. A photocard of the Queen's Hotel Ennis, proprietor Rudolf Bloom. An envelope addressed to my dear son, Leopold. What fractions of phrases did the lecture of those five whole words evoke? Tomorrow will be a week that I received. It is no use, Leopold, to be with your dear mother. There is not more to stand to her. All for me is out. Be kind to Athos, Leopold, my dear son, always, of me. Das Herz, Gott, dein. What reminiscences of a human subject suffering from progressive melancholia did these objects evoke in Bloom? An old man widower, unkempt hair, in bed, with head covered, sighing. An infirm dog, Athos. Aconite resorted to by increasing doses of grains and scruples as a palliative of recrudescent neuralgia. The face and death of a septuagenarian, suicide by poison. Why did Bloom experience a sentiment of remorse? Because in immature impatience he had treated with disrespect certain beliefs and practices. As? The prohibition of the use of flesh meat and milk at one meal. The hebdomadary symposium of incoordinately abstract. The perfervidly concrete mercantile co-ex-religionist ex-compatriots. The circumcision of male infants. The supernatural character of Judaic scripture. The ineffability of the Tetragrammaron, the sanctity of the Sabbath. How do these beliefs and practices now appear to him? Not more rational than they had then appeared, not less rational than other beliefs and practices now appeared. What first reminiscence had he of Rudolf Bloom, deceased? Rudolf Bloom, deceased, narrated to his son Leopold Bloom, aged 6, a retrospective arrangement of migrations and settlements in and between Dublin, London, Florence, Milan, Vienna, Budapest, Jean Bathily, with statements of satisfaction, his grandfather having seen Maria Theresa, Emperor of Austria, Queen of Hungary, with commercial advice, having taken care of pence, the pounds having taken care of themselves. Leopold Bloom, aged 6, had accompanied these narrations by constant consultation of a geographical map of Europe, political, and by suggestions for the establishment of affiliated business premises in the various centres mentioned. Had time equally but differently obliterated the memory of these migrations in narrator and listener? In narrator, by the access of years and in consequence of the use of narcotic toxin, in listener, by the access of years and in consequence of the action of distraction upon vicarious experiences. What idiosyncrasies of the narrator were concomitant products of amnesia? Occasionally he ate without having previously removed his hat. Occasionally he drank voraciously the juice of gooseberry fool from an inclined plate. Occasionally he removed from his lips the traces of food by means of a lacerated envelope or other accessible fragment of paper. What two phenomena of senescence were more frequent? The myopic digital calculation of coins, eructation consequent upon repletion. What object offered partial consolation for these reminiscences? The endowment policy, the bank passbook, the certificate of the possession of scrip. Reduce Bloom by cross-multiplication of reverses of fortune, from which these supports protected him, and by elimination of all positive values, to a negligible, negative, irrational, unreal quantity. Successively, in descending helotic order. Poverty, that of the outdoor hawker of imitation jewellery, the dun for the recovery of bad and doubtful debts, the poor rate and deputy cess collector. Mendicancy, that of the fraudulent bankrupt with negligible assets paying 1 and 4 pence in the pound. Sandwich man, distributor of throwaways, nocturnal vagrant, insinuating sycophant, maimed sailor, blind stripling, superannuated bailiff's man, marfeast, lickplate, spoilsport. Pickthank, eccentric public laughingstock seated on bench of public park under discarded perforated umbrella. Destitution, the inmate of Old Man's House, Royal Hospital, Kilmainham, the inmate of Simpson's Hospital for reduced but respectable men permanently disabled by gout or want of sight. Nadir of misery, the aged, impotent, disenfranchised, rate-supported, moribund, lunatic pauper. With which attendant indignities? The unsympathetic indifference of previously amiable females, the contempt of muscular males, the acceptance of fragments of bread, the simulated ignorance of casual acquaintances, the latration of illegitimate, unlicensed vagabond dogs, the infantile discharge of decomposed vegetable missiles worth little or nothing, or less than nothing. By what could such a situation be precluded? By decease, change of state, by departure, change of place. Which preferably? The latter by the line of least resistance. What considerations rendered it not entirely undesirable? Constant cohabitation impeding mutual toleration of personal defects. The habit of independent purchase increasingly cultivated. The necessity to counteract by impermanent sojourn the permanence of arrest. What considerations rendered it not irrational? The parties concerned uniting had increased and multiplied, which being done, offspring produced and educed to maturity. The parties, if now disunited, were obliged to reunite for increase and multiplication, which was absurd, to form by reunion the original couple of uniting parties, which was impossible. What considerations rendered it desirable? The attractive character of certain localities in Ireland and abroad, as represented in general geographical maps of polychrome design, or in special ordnance survey charts by employment of scale numerals and hachures. In Ireland, the cliffs of Moher, the windy wilds of Connemara, Loch Ney with submerged petrified city, the Giant's Causeway, Fort Camden and Fort Carlisle, the Golden Vale of Tipperary, the Islands of Arran, the pastures of Royal Meath, Bridges Elm in Kildare, the Queen's Island Shipyard in Belfast, the Salmon Leap, the Lakes of Killarney. Abroad, Ceylon, with Spice Garden supplying tea to Thomas Kernan, agent for Pulbrook, Robertson & Co., 2 Mincing Lane, London, EC, 5 Dame Street, Dublin. Jerusalem, the Holy City, with Mosque of Omar and Gate of Damascus, goal of aspiration. The Straits of Gibraltar, the unique birthplace of Marion Tweedy. The Parthenon, containing statues, nude Grecian divinities. The Wall Street money market, which controlled international finance. The Plaza de Toros at La Linea, Spain, where O'Hara of the Camerons had slain the bull. Niagara, over which no human being had passed with impunity. The land of the Eskimos, eaters of soap. The forbidden country of Tibet, from which no traveller returns. The Bay of Naples, to see which was to die, the Dead Sea. Under what guidance, following what signs? At sea, septentrional, by night the Pole Star, located at the point of intersection of the right line from Beta to Alpha in Ursa Major, produced and divided externally at Omega, and the hypotenuse of the right-angled triangle formed by the line Alpha-Omega, so produced, and the line Alpha-Delta of Ursa Major. On land meridional, a bispherical moon revealed in imperfect varying phases of lunation through the posterior interstices of the imperfectly occluded skirt of a Carnot's negligent perambulating female, a pillar of the cloud by day. What public advertisement would divulge the occultation of the departed? £5 reward, lost, stolen or strayed from his residence 7 Eccles Street, missing gent about 40, answering to the name of Bloom, Leopold, Poldy, height 5'9.5", full build, olive complexion, may have since grown a beard, when last seen was wearing a black suit. Above sum will be paid for information leading to his discovery. What universal binomial denominations would be his as entity and non-entity, assumed by any or known to none, every man or no man? What tributes his? Honour and gifts of strangers, the friends of every man, a nymph immortal, beauty, the bride of no man. Would the departed never nowhere nohow reappear? Ever he would wander, self-compelled, to the extreme limit of his cometary orbit, beyond the fixed stars and variable suns and telescopic planets, astronomical waifs and strays, to the extreme boundary of space, passing from land to land, among peoples, amid events. Somewhere imperceptibly he would hear, and somehow reluctantly, some compelled, obey the summons of recall. Whence, disappearing from the constellation of the Northern Crown, he would somehow reappear, reborn, above Delta, in the constellation of Cassiopeia, and after incalculable eons of peregrination, return an estranged avenger, a wreaker of justice on malefactors, a dark crusader, a sleeper awakened, with financial resources, by supposition, surpassing those of Rothschild or of the Silver King. What would render such return irrational? An unsatisfactory equation between an exodus and return in time through reversible space, and an exodus and return in space through irreversible time. What play of forces inducing inertia rendered departure undesirable? The lateness of the hour, rendering procrastinatory, the obscurity of the night, rendering invisible, the uncertainty of thoroughfares, rendering perilous, the necessity for repose, obviating movement, the proximity of an occupied bed, obviating research, the anticipation of warmth, human, tempered with coolness, linen, obviating desire and rendering desirable, the statue of Narcissus, sound without echo, desired desire. What advantages were possessed by an occupied as distinct from an unoccupied bed? The removal of nocturnal solitude, the superior quality of human, mature female, to inhuman, hot water jar, calefaction, the stimulation of matutinal contact, The economy of mangling done on the premises, in the case of trousers accurately folded and placed lengthwise between the spring mattress, striped, and the woolen mattress, biscuit section. What past consecutive causes, before rising pre-apprehended, of accumulated fatigue did Bloom, before rising, silently recapitulate? The preparation of breakfast, burnt offering. Intestinal congestion and premeditative defecation, holy of holies. The bath, rite of John. The funeral, rite of Samuel. The advertisement of Alexander Keyes, Urim and Thummim. The unsubstantial lunch, rite of Melchizedek. The visit to Museum and National Library, holy place. The book hunt along Bedford Row, Merchant's Arch, Wellington Quay. Simchat Torah. The music in the Ormond Hotel, Shura Shurim. The altercation with the truculent troglodyte in Bernard Kiernan's premises, Holocaust. A blank period of time, including a car drive, a visit to a house of mourning, a leave-taking, wilderness, the eroticism produced by feminine exhibitionism, rite of Onan, the prolonged delivery of Mrs. Mina Purefoy, heave offering, the visit to the disorderly house of Mrs. Bella Cohen, 82 Tyrone Street Lower, and subsequent brawl and chance medley in Beaver Street, Armageddon. Nocturnal perambulation to and from the cabman's shelter, but bridge. Atonement. What self-imposed enigma did Bloom, about to rise in order to go, so as to conclude, lest he should not conclude, involuntarily apprehend? The cause of a brief, sharp, unforeseen, heard, loud, lone crack, emitted by the insentient material of a strain-veined timber table. What self-involved enigma did Bloom, risen, going, gathering multicolored, multiform, multitudinous garments, voluntarily apprehending, not comprehend? Who was Mackintosh? What self-evident enigma, pondered with desultory constancy during 30 years, did Bloom now, having effected natural obscurity by the extinction of artificial light, silently, suddenly comprehend? Where was Moses when the candle went out? What imperfections in a perfect day did Bloom, walking silently, successively enumerate? A provisional failure to obtain renewal of an advertisement, to obtain a certain quantity of tea from Thomas Kernan, agent for Pulbrook Robertson & Co., 5 Dame Street, Dublin, and 2 Mincing Lane, London, E.C. To certify the presence or absence of posterior rectal orifice in the case of Hellenic female divinities. To obtain admission, gratuitous or paid, to the performance of Lear by Mrs. Banman Palmer at the Gaiety Theatre, 46, 47, 48, 49 South King Street. What impression of an absent face did Bloom, arrested, silently recall? The face of her father, the late Major Brian Cooper Tweedy, Royal Dublin Fusiliers of Gibraltar and Rehoboth, Dolphin's Barn. What recurrent impressions of the same were possible by the hypothesis? Retreating at the terminus of the Great Northern Railway, Amiens Street, with constant uniform acceleration, along parallel lines, meeting at infinity, if produced, along parallel lines, reproduced from infinity, with constant uniform retardation at the terminus of the Great Northern Railway, Amiens Street, returning. What miscellaneous effects of female personal wearing apparel were perceived by him? A pair of new, inodorous, half-silk black ladies' hose. A pair of new violet garters. A pair of outsized ladies' drawers of India mull, cut on generous lines, redolent of a Popanax, jessamine, and Marathi's Turkish cigarettes, and containing a long bright steel safety pin, folded curvilinear, a camisole de batiste with thin lace border, an accordion underskirt of blue silk morette, all these objects being disposed irregularly on the top of a rectangular trunk, quadruple battened, having capped corners with multicolored labels, initialled on its foreside in white lettering BCT, Brian Cooper Tweedy. What impersonal objects were perceived? A commode, one leg fractured, totally covered by square cretonne cutting, apple design, on which rested a lady's black straw hat. Orange-keyed ware, bought, of Henry Price, basket, fancy goods, chinaware, and ironmongery manufacturers, 21-22-23 Moore Street. Disposed irregularly on the washstand and floor, and consisting of basin, soap dish, and brush tray on the washstand together, pitcher and night article on the floor separate. Bloom's acts. He deposited the articles of clothing on a chair, removed his remaining articles of clothing, took from beneath the bolster at the head of the bed a folded long white nightshirt, inserted his head and arms into the proper apertures of the nightshirt, removed a pillow from the head to the foot of the bed, prepared the bed linen accordingly, and entered the bed. How? With circumspection, as invariably when entering an abode, his own or not his own. With solicitude, the snake spiral springs of the mattress being old, the brass quoits and pendant viper radii loose and tremulous under stress and strain. Prudently, as entering a lair or ambush of lust or adder. Lightly, the less to disturb. Reverently, the bed of conception and of birth, of consummation, of marriage, and of breach of marriage, of sleep, and of death. What did his limbs, when gradually extended, encounter? New clean bed linen, additional odors, the presence of a human form, female, hers, the imprint of a human form, male, not his. Some crumbs, some flakes of potted meat, recooked, which he removed. If he had smiled, why would he have smiled? To reflect that each one who enters imagines himself to be the first to enter, whereas he is always the last term of a preceding series, even if the first term of a succeeding one, each imagining himself to be first, last, only, and alone, whereas he is neither first nor last, nor only, nor alone, in a series originating in and repeated to infinity. What preceding series? Assuming Mulvey to be the first term of his series, Penrose, Bartell Darcy, Professor Goodwin, Julius Mastiansky, John Henry Menton, Father Bernard Corrigan, a farmer at the Royal Dublin Society's horse show, Maggot O'Reilly, Matthew Dillon, Valentine Blake Dillon, Lord Mayor of Dublin, Christopher Callanan, Lenehan, an Italian organ grinder, an unknown gentleman of the Gaiety Theatre, Benjamin Dollard, Simon Dedalus, Andrew Pisser-Burke, Joseph Cuff, Wisdom Healy, Alderman John Hooper, Dr. Francis Brady, Father Sebastian of Mount Argus, a bootblack at the General Post Office, Hugh E. Blazes Boylan, and so each and so on, to no last term. What were his reflections concerning the last member of this series and late occupant of the bed? Reflections on his vigour, a bounder, corporal proportion, a bill-sticker, commercial ability, a bester, impressionability, a boaster. Why for the observer impressionability in addition to vigour, corporal proportion, and commercial ability? Because he had observed with augmenting frequency in the preceding members of the same series the same concupiscence, inflammably transmitted first with alarm, then with understanding, then with desire, finally with fatigue, with alternating symptoms of epicene comprehension and apprehension. With what antagonistic sentiments were his subsequent reflections affected? Envy, jealousy, abnegation, equanimity. Envy? Of a bodily and mental male organism, specially adapted for the superincumbent posture of energetic human copulation and energetic piston and cylinder movement, necessary for the complete satisfaction of a constant but not acute concupiscence, resident in a bodily and mental female organism, passive but not obtuse. Jealousy? Because a nature full and volatile in its free state was alternately the agent and reagent of attraction, because action between agents and reagents at all instants varied, with inverse proportion of increase and decrease, with incessant circular extension and radial re-entrance, because the controlled contemplation of the fluctuation of attraction produced, if desired, a fluctuation of pleasure. Abnegation? In virtue of A, acquaintance initiated in September 1903 in the establishment of George Mesias, merchant tailor and outfitter, 5 Eden Quay. B, hospitality extended and received in kind, reciprocated and reappropriated in person. C, comparative youth subject to impulses of ambition and magnanimity, collegial altruism and amorous egoism. D, extra-racial attraction, interracial inhibition, superracial prerogative. E, an imminent provincial musical tour, common current expenses, net proceeds divided. Equanimity? As natural as any and every natural act of a nature expressed or understood, executed in natured nature by natural creatures in accordance with his, her, and their natured natures of dissimilar similarity. as not as calamities, as a cataclysmic annihilation of the planet in consequence of collision with a dark sun, as less reprehensible than theft, highway robbery, cruelty to children and animals, obtaining money under false pretenses, forgery, embezzlement, misappropriation of public money, betrayal of public trust, malingering, mayhem, corruption of minors, criminal libel, blackmail, contempt of court, arson, treason, felony, mutiny on the high seas, trespass, burglary, jailbreaking, practice of unnatural vice, desertion from armed forces in the field, perjury, poaching, usury, intelligence with the king's enemies, impersonation, criminal assault, manslaughter, willful and premeditated murder, as not more abnormal than all other altered processes of adaptation to altered conditions of existence, resulting in a reciprocal equilibrium between the bodily organism and its attendant circumstances, food, beverages, acquired habits, indulged inclinations, significant disease, as more than inevitable, irreparable. Why more abnegation than jealousy, less envy than equanimity? From outrage, matrimony, to outrage, adultery, there arose naught but outrage, copulation. Yet the matrimonial violator of the matrimonial violated had not been outraged by the adulterous violator of the adulterously violated. What retribution, if any? Assassination? Never, as two wrongs do not make one right. Duel by combat? No. Divorce? Not now. Exposure by mechanical artifice, automatic bed, or individual testimony, concealed ocular witness? Not yet. Suit for damages by legal influence, or simulation of assault with evidence of injury sustained, self-inflicted? Not impossibly. If any, positively connivance, introduction of emulation, material, a prosperous rival agency of publicity, moral, a successful rival agent of intimacy. Depreciation? Alienation, humiliation, separation, protecting the one separated from the other, protecting separator from both. By what reflections did he, a conscious reactor against the void in certitude, justify to himself his sentiments? The preordained frangibility of the hymen, the presupposed intangibility of the thing in itself, the incongruity and disproportion between the self-prolonging tension of the thing proposed to be done and the self-abbreviating relaxation of the thing done, the fallaciously inferred debility of the female, the muscularity of the male, the variations of ethical codes, the natural grammatical transition by inversion involving no alteration of sense of an aorist preterite proposition, parsed as masculine subject, monosyllabic, onomatopoeic transitive verb with direct feminine object. From the active voice into its correlative aorist preterite proposition, parsed as feminine subject, auxiliary verb, and quasi-monosyllabic onomatopoeic past participle with complementary masculine agent, in the passive voice. The continued product of seminators by generation, the continual production of semen by distillation, the futility of triumph or protest or vindication, the inanity of extolled virtue, the lethargy of nescient matter, the apathy of the stars. In what final satisfaction did these antagonistic sentiments and reflections, reduced to their simplest forms, converge? Satisfaction at the ubiquity in eastern and western terrestrial hemispheres, in all habitable lands and islands explored or unexplored, the land of the midnight sun, the islands of the blessed, the isles of Greece, the land of promise, of adipose posterior female hemispheres, redolent of milk and honey, and of excretory sanguine and seminal warmth, reminiscent of secular families, of curves of amplitude, insusceptible of moods of impression or of contrarieties of expression, expressive of mute, immutable, mature animality. The visible signs of antisatisfaction: an approximate erection, a solicitous aversion, a gradual elevation, a tentative revelation, a silent contemplation. Then he kissed the plump, mellow, yellow, smellow melons of her rump, on each plump, melanous hemisphere, in their mellow, yellow furrow, with obscure, prolonged, provocative, melon-smellonous oscillation. The visible signs of post-satisfaction: a silent contemplation, a tentative velation, a gradual abasement, a solicitous aversion, approximate erection. What followed this silent action? Somnolent invocation, less somnolent recognition, incipient excitation, catechetical interrogation. With what modifications did the narrator reply to this interrogation? Negative. He omitted to mention the clandestine correspondence between Martha Clifford and Henry Flower, the public altercation at and in the vicinity of the licensed premises of Bernard Kiernan and Company Limited, 8, 9, and 10 Little Britain Street, the erotic provocation and response thereto caused by the exhibitionism of Gertrude Gertie, surname unknown. Positive, he included mention of a performance by Mrs. Bandman Palmer of Lear at the Gaiety Theatre, 46, 47, 48, 49 South King Street, an invitation to supper at Wynn's, Murphy's Hotel, 35, 36, and 37 Lower Abbey Street, a volume of Pacamonis' pornographical tendency entitled Sweets of Sin, anonymous author, a gentleman of fashion, a temporary concussion caused by a falsely calculated movement in the course of a postcenal gymnastic display, the victim, since completely recovered, being Stephen Dedalus, professor and author, elder surviving son of Simon Dedalus, of no fixed occupation, an aeronautical feat executed by him, narrator, in the presence of a witness, the professor and author aforesaid, with promptitude of decision and gymnastic flexibility. Was the narration otherwise unaltered by modifications? Absolutely. Which event or person emerged as the salient point of his narration? Stephen Dedalus, professor and author. What limitations of activity and inhibitions of conjugal rights were perceived by listener and narrator concerning themselves during the course of this intermittent and increasingly more laconic narration? By the listener, a limitation of fertility, inasmuch as marriage had been celebrated one calendar month after the 18th anniversary of her birth, 8th of September, 1870, viz. 8th of October, and consummated on the same date with female issue born, 15th of June, 1889, having been anticipatorily consummated on the 10th of September of the same year, and complete carnal intercourse with ejaculation of semen within the natural female organ, having last taken place 5 weeks previous, viz. 27th of November, 1893, to the birth on the 29th of December, 1893, of second and only male issue, deceased, 9th of January, 1894, aged 11 days. There remained a period of 10 years, 5 months and 18 days, during which carnal intercourse had been incomplete, without ejaculation of semen within the natural female organ. By the narrator, a limitation of activity, mental and corporal, inasmuch as complete mental intercourse between himself and the listener had not taken place since the consummation of puberty, indicated by catamenic hemorrhage of the female issue of narrator and listener, 15th of September, 1903. There remained a period of 9 months and 1 day, during which, in consequence of a pre-established natural comprehension in incomprehension between the consummated females, listener and issue, complete corporal liberty of action had been circumscribed. How? By various reiterated feminine interrogation concerning the masculine destination, whither, the place where, the time at which, the duration for which, the object with which, in the case of temporary absences, projected or effected. What moved visibly above the listener's and the narrator's invisible thoughts? The upcast reflection of a lamp and shade, the inconstant series of concentric circles of varying gradations of light and shadow. In what directions did listener and narrator lie? Listener, southeast by east, narrator, northwest by west, on the 53rd parallel of latitude north and 6th meridian of longitude west, at an angle of 45 degrees, to the terrestrial equator. In what state of rest or motion? At rest, relatively to themselves and to each other, in motion being each and both carried westward, forward, and rearward, respectively, by the proper perpetual motion of the earth through ever-changing tracts of never-changing space. In what posture? Listener, reclined semilaterally, left hand under head, right leg extended in a straight line and resting on left leg, flexed, in the attitude of Gaetellus, fulfilled, recumbent, big with seed. Narrator, reclined laterally, left, with right and left legs flexed, the index finger and thumb of the right hand resting on the bridge of the nose, in the attitude depicted on a snapshot photograph made by Percy Apjohn, the child man, weary, the man-child, in the womb. Womb? Weary? He rests. he has travelled. With? Sinbad the sailor, and Tinbad the tailor, and Jinbad the jailer, and Whinbad the whaler, and Ninbad the nailer, and Finbad the failer, and Binbad the bailer, and Pinbad the paler, and Minbad the mailer, and Hinbad the hailer, and Rinbad the railer, and Dinbad the kailer, and Vinbad the quailer, and Linbad the yaler, and Jinbad the tailor. When? Going to a dark bed there was a square round Sinbad the sailor, rock's orc's egg, in the night of the bed of all the ox of the rocks of dark and bad the bright day lair. Where?
Yes, because he never did a thing like that before, as asked to get his breakfast in bed with a couple of eggs. Since the City Arms Hotel, when he used to be pretending to be laid up, with a sick voice, doing his highness to make himself interesting to that old faggot Mrs. Reardon that he thought he'd a great leg of. And she never left us a farthing. All for masses for herself and her soul, greatest miser ever was, actually afraid to lay out fourpence for her methylated spirit. Telling me all her ailments. She had too much old chat in her about politics and earthquakes and the end of the world. Let us have a bit of fun first. God help the world if all the women were her sort. Down on bathing suits and low necks, of course nobody wanted her to wear. I suppose she was pious because no man would look at her twice. I hope I'll never be like her. I wonder she didn't want us to cover our faces. But she was a well-educated woman, certainly. And her gabby talk about Mr. Reardon here and Mr. Reardon there. I suppose he was glad to get shut of her and her dog. Smelling my fur, and always edging to get up under my petticoats, especially then. Still, I like that in him. Polite to old women like that, and waiters and beggars too. He's not proud out of nothing, but not always. If ever he got anything really serious the matter with him, it's much better for them to go into a hospital where everything's clean. Oh, but I suppose I'd have to dring it into him for a month, yes. And then we'd have a hospital nurse next thing on the carpet. Have him staying there till they throw him out, or a nun, maybe. Like the smutty photo he has. She's as much a nun as I'm not, yes. Because they're so weak and puling when they're sick. They want a woman to get well. If his nose bleeds, you think it was, oh, tragic. And that dying-looking one off the South Circular, when he sprained his foot at the choir party at the Sugarloaf Mountain, the day I wore that dress. Myth, Dak, bringing him flowers, the worst old ones she could find at the bottom of the basket. Anything at all to get into a man's bedroom, with her old maid's voice, trying to imagine he was dying on account of her. To never see thy face again. Though he looked more like a man, with his beard a bit grown in the bed, father was the same. Besides, I hate bandaging and dosing. When he cut his toe with a razor paring his corns, afraid he'd get blood poisoning. But if it was the thing I was sick, then we'd see what attention. Only, of course, the woman hides it, not to give all the trouble they do. Yes, he came somewhere, I'm sure, by his appetite. Anyway, love it's not, or he'd be off his feed thinking of her. So either it was one of those night women, if it was down there he was really, and the hotel story he made up a pack of lies to hide it. Planning it. Hines kept me. Who did I meet? Ah, yes, I met. Do you remember Menton? And who else? Who? Let me see. That big babby face. I saw him when he not long married, flirting with a young girl at Poole's Miriorama, and turned my back on him when he slinked out looking quite conscious. What harm, but he had the impudence to make up to me one time. Well done to him, mouth almighty, and his boiled eyes. Of all the big stupos I ever met. And that's called a solicitor. Only for I hate having a long wrangle in bed. Or else, if it's not that, it's some little bitch or other he got in with somewhere or picked up on the sly. If they only knew him as well as I do, yes, because the day before yesterday he was scribbling something, a letter, when I came into the front room for the matches to show him Dignam's death in the paper, as if something told me, and he covered it up with the blotting paper, pretending to be thinking about business. So very probably that was it. To somebody who thinks she has a softy in him, because all men get a bit like that at his age, especially getting on to 40 he is now, so as to wheedle any money she can out of him. No fool like an old fool. And then the usual kissing my bottom was to hide it, not that I care two straws who he does it with, or knew before that way. I would like to find out, so long as I don't have the two of them under my nose all the time. Like that slut, that Mary we had in Ontario Terrace, padding out her false bottom to excite him. Bad enough to get the smell of those painted women off him. Once or twice I had a suspicion by getting him to come near me when I found the long hair on his coat. Without that one. When I went into the kitchen, pretending he was drinking water. One woman is not enough for them. It was all his fault, of course, ruining servants. Then proposing she could eat at our table, on Christmas, if you please. Oh, no, thank you. Not in my house. Stealing my potatoes and the oysters, 2 and 6 per dozen. Going out to see her aunt, if you please. Common robbery, so it was. But I was sure he had something on with that one. It takes me to find out a thing like that. He said, "You have no proof it was her." Proof? Oh, yes. Her aunt was very fond of oysters. But I told her what I thought of her, suggesting me to go out to be alone with her. I wouldn't lower myself to spy on them. The garters I found in her room the Friday she was out, that was enough